Stay tuned
for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And I hope you're having a very pleasant and safe 4th of July holiday weekend as we race on into the week, Monday coming up. Tonight we're going to take you on one of those remote places where UFO activity has been going on. Now, chances are you probably haven't heard about this before except for here on this program. Even those of you who like to keep up to date on the UFO hotspots and where they are in for something very unique tonight. Now, let me just give you a little taste of the situation. In a remote section of New Mexico, local people, including members of an Indian reservation, have been seeing a flurry of UFO sightings. Red, blue, green lights are seen flying in and out of craters and even chasing or pacing cars. Now, add to that the crash of a government stealth bomber on May the 10th, and along that with a mutilated cow near the crater, you have a Paranet exclusive on the mysterious activities near El Malpea, New Mexico. We're going to take you there with a special correspondent who is in the area and in the midst of it. I have lots of questions for her, and I'm sure you will too. Also tonight, we're going to hear about a report of the U.S. government capturing and building replicas of these captured craft. It is allegedly happening at that not-so-secret test base, Area 51, and also in New Mexico. This has all the trappings of the Bob Lazar story, who was a former base worker who claimed to see UFOs there. Now, personally, I don't believe Bob Lazar's story, but this new case may have something to it. We'll be talking with Area 51 researcher Glenn Campbell, also known affectionately on the computer networks as Psycho Spy, but we'll be talking to him about this whole thing a little bit later in the hour. As always, we're also interested in hearing your sighting reports, your comments or whatever, and questions for our guests. And you can reach us tonight toll-free, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. Now, with that in mind, let's go to my guest, my first guest. She is a student. She's getting a master's in archaeology, and she is down in the El Malpea. Is that correct, Kay? El Malpea?
El Malpea.
El Malpea, thank you. She's down in the El Malpea area of New Mexico. Right now she's talking to us from Gallup, New Mexico. But actually, Kay set the area up for her. By the way, my guest is Kay Winter, and I'm pleased to have her on the program this evening. Good evening, Kay.
Good evening, Michael.
Thanks for being on the program. Now, set up the area for us. Describe the area and how remote it is.
All right. The area that is in question is running from Grants, New Mexico, south on Highway 53, for about 70 miles from Grants through the Navajo Indian Reservation, through the El Malpea National Monument, through El Moro National Monument, then the Navajo Reservation, Rama, New Mexico, and on to the Zuni Reservation.
Okay. And now, let me, I want to comment about this first of all. I personally have had three occasions, and I think this is quite unusual, and it's something that deserves attention and looking at. But I've had three separate incidences, including Kay's report from that area of New Mexico down there, including a cattle mutilation report that came over our computer network about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But I think most important, and we're going to talk about this a little bit in depth with Kay, is that on May the 10th, a stealth bomber crashed down there near the Zuni Indian Reservation. And according to Kay's reports and talking to the locals down there, apparently there was a flurry of UFO activity about a week prior to the stealth bomber crash. Is that correct, Kay?
I'm sorry, Michael?
Is that correct? There was a flurry of UFO activity.
Yes, there was. For a solid week before the May 10th crash, the Zunis were reporting UFO activity every night for a week.
Okay. Okay. I realize it's a little bit difficult where you are out there in the middle of nowhere in a payphone, but... I realize it's a little bit difficult with the payphone and everything out there in a remote location.
In the middle of nowhere.
Tell us a little bit about the reports that you've taken and talked to these local people down there. Tell us a little bit about what has been described to you.
On the stealth crash.
On the stealth crash and the UFO sightings.
All right. I'll start with the stealth crash. Number one, the stealth crashed on sacred Zuni land, a mesa called Paye Mesa. It sits above Nutria Lake, which is about halfway between Raymond, New Mexico, and the Zuni Reservation. And as I said, interestingly, the Zunis were reporting UFO activity in the area every night for a week before the crash. However, there is some question if there is a connection or not, because as the locals have told me, it's not unusual for military aircraft to be flying and flying very low in that area. As one Zuni woman said, they do it all the time. We complain to the Air Force, but they don't do anything. They don't care. A fellow named John Claybys of the FAA Southwest Region reported that the night of the crash, there may have been as many as 12 stealths flying in the area. But ironically, it may in fact have been nature, not a UFO, that brought the stealths down. The locals are saying that at Nutria Lake this year, the duck population is very high. The stealths were flying at 500 feet or lower. And the eyewitnesses reported that there was no explosion in the air. It exploded on contact with the ground.
Okay.
Therefore, it is highly likely that a duck was taken into the intake of the plane, and if they were only at 500 feet, there was no room to recover.
Okay, now this crash was actually subsequent to about a week's worth of sighting activity. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. And there was no sightings reported the night of the crash, but the FAA would acknowledge that there were at least 12 stealths in the area. The one that crashed was out of the Air Force Base at Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Okay. How far is that from El Malpie?
Probably 300 miles.
Okay. Now, Kate, tell us about the UFO sightings, the ones that that were chasing or pacing these cars.
Pacing the cars. Well, because of the stealth crash, it seemed to prompt all the local residents to start recalling and talking about other unusual instances. And they tell me that Nutria Lake, Acoma Lake, Fence Lake, and the El Maipei area have long been the site of UFO activity, with El Maipei being the most active. And that brings about a set of reports from that area. And I would like to say that a few of the people I talk to are government employees, and they prefer to remain anonymous for obvious reasons.
Okay. Kay, let me interrupt right there. I want you to hold that. We've got to go to break, but when we come back, we'll cover that.
Okay.
And pick that up and hear about that, because I think it's very, very interesting to talk about the sightings as they are being sighted in conjunction with military aircraft flying around in the area.
Yes, so there are, and I have seen some also.
Okay, very good. We'll come back to that in just a moment. My guest is Kay Winter. She's a special correspondent to Paranet, a member of MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena. She's down in the remote regions of southwestern New Mexico, and she's given us a report on some unusual activity that is taking place down there. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
You think of them as over the hill, cranky. They've seen better days. They're not worth saving. But your old computers have the power to give new life. The computers you've written off as useless can prevent millions of people with disabilities from being written off. Every day, computers like yours are being used to train people with differing abilities. And, after a while, they can hum with skills society needs. Your old computers can help us develop this precious human resource. In the process, we might just discover another Beethoven, Albert Einstein, Franklin Roosevelt, or Helen Keller. Donate your old computers to the National Christina Foundation, a not-for-profit foundation. Call 1-800-CHRISTINA, 1-800-CRISTINA. Machines you can write off, people you can't. Donated computers and office equipment are tax deductible.
The mystery of UFOs, strange lights in the sky, crashed saucers, alien abductions, secret military projects, government cover-ups, hoaxes, and frauds. We cover it all on the Paranet UFO Continuum. Now back to your host, Michael Corbin.
And please welcome back my guest, Kay Winter. She's a special correspondent to Paranet and also a MICAP member. And she is down in a remote area of New Mexico. We're talking about that tonight. A very interesting place where the locals are seeing flying saucers or UFOs, military aircraft, and also we've gotten a report independent of Kay of a cattle mutilation down in that area. Welcome back, Kay.
Hello, Mike.
Okay, now let's get on to the business about the people that have reported seeing the UFO to you. What have they seen?
All right. I have three reports. I guess I should back up for just a second, say that when you come through the LMIPA area, you drive up a hill, a long hill out of the valley called Cinder Hill, and this is just before you reach the Bandera Crater, which, by the way, is bisected by the Continental Divide.
Now, the Bandera Crater is an old volcano, right?
It is an old volcano. The El Maipei area is a volcanic area approximately 17 miles long with several inactive craters.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I have three reports of cars with one to four persons that began driving up Cinder Hill when they first saw the lights. In two cases, they first looked like bright stars, but, and I quote, "They were too bright, and they stayed with us. Then they came closer, and they lit up the inside of the car. We kept driving past the crater and through the forest, and the object stayed with us. It was at the side of the car, just above the trees. It sort of hopped along the treetops. It followed us for a ways, and then it just disappeared." The second report I have is nearly identical, and it involved a retired lady from Zuni when she experienced nearly the same thing in the same place. She was, quote, "so scared, my car was bright as daylight, and I didn't look right or left. I just kept driving till it went away." The third of these involved four women, one of which was the mayor of Grants. They were driving from Grants to Rayma, and again at night. They said the object appeared to one side of their car, and like the other two reports, hopped along over the treetops as it paralleled their car. They were so frightened, they stopped at a business on the way to Ramah. They rushed inside, and they asked the owner to, quote, call the police, call the highway patrol, call the TV station, call somebody. As they calmed down and they talked to the business owners, they were describing the object. All the while they were talking, one of the owners is drawing a picture. When they were done talking, he held up his drawing and said, did it look something like this? And that is exactly what it looked like, they exclaimed. In all the cases...
Let me interrupt you. What did it look like?
Here. In all the cases, the witnesses described a saucer-shaped object, silvery with red, green, and white pulsating lights. The object was said to be, quote, not too large, maybe a 20 to 30-foot diameter.
Very interesting. Now, I also understand from talking to you before this, what are the locals saying about this? They do not believe necessarily that they're seeing alien spacecraft?
No, they don't. Every single person I have talked to, number one, believes that the Roswell crash was real, that there was a spacecraft, and that what they are seeing is that technology being copied by our military and doing practice flights in their part of the world.
Okay, now that's very interesting because that's going to be the subject of our second half of the program tonight, allegedly talking about the deal. The government is building and flying replicas of actual alien spacecraft that have been captured. Are the people down there, are they scared about this?
No, they're, of course, a couple of them were when they saw this, but it seems to be the reports that I have gotten go back to 1953. And for the people that live in this area, seeing UFOs or seeing lights in the sky has simply become a way of life. Very few people that I run into haven't seen something at some time.
So it's something that's been going on for quite some time down there.
Well, it has. There was an interesting sighting at a mine, which is just 4 or 5 miles west of Bandera Crater. For 3 consecutive nights, all of the lights at the mine went off. At the same time, a UFO floated across the top of the mine. As it passed, the lights came back on, and the UFO was seen floating towards Bandera Crater. In another instance, a fellow who lives in the area on more than one occasion has seen the, quote, silver saucer hovering above Bandera Crater and shining a beam into the crater.
Boy, that's incredible. Have the police investigated any of this? Have you had any contact with the local law enforcement or anything down there?
I asked several of the people I've talked to if they reported this, and they looked at me and laughed and said, why would we? We see this all the time, and outside of this group of people, probably no one would believe us.
Wow. Have you seen, now you said you've seen something, or what have you observed down there yourself?
I'm sorry, Michael, I couldn't hear you.
I see, what have you observed down there yourself?
What have I observed myself?
Yes, uh-huh.
I have not seen any lights in the sky. I did have an interesting chat with a local employee just this past week. North of Ramah is a lake, and along the lake is a canyon. People live along the top of the canyon, and they said, we're getting very tired of that aircraft flying through our canyon at night. And when I asked them to describe it, they said, it's large. It looks like an old World War II plane. It's dark green. It has no markings. It's so dark it's nearly black. And I said, well, if it's a World War II plane, does it have propellers? They said, no. It doesn't seem to, but it flies down through the canyon and buzzes over the top of our houses 3 to 4 times a week. We're tired of the plane. We have called the Air Force and complained, but they don't call us back.
Uh-huh. That sounds kind of reminiscent of some of the activity down in the southern area of Colorado, the San Luis Valley, which we've talked about on this program before.
Exactly.
Kay, now I know you to be a skeptical person, and this report that you're filing is quite interesting. What is your personal feeling about this? What opinions have you drawn or conclusions have you drawn from what you have observed and been involved with down there? What is your opinion of it?
All right, Michael, I would say, number one, this is an area of small towns and reservations. These are hard-working, friendly people. I don't think they're given to wild stories. The people that I've talked to are highly credible people, business owners, ranchers. They're not hysterical people. I think that they're very credible. I think that because of the type of lives they lead And I'm getting the same story from so many different people that I think that adds to the credibility.
Okay. Well, Kay, I'll drop it there, and we'll keep in touch, and we'll update our audience as things come about. And keep in touch with me and let me know what else takes place, and we'll be talking to you, okay?
I will, Michael.
All right. Thanks very much, Kay.
Thank you.
That was Kay Winter. She is a special correspondent to Paranet. She's also a member of our investigative organization, MICAP, Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena. Kay is going to file a report that will be put in the next issue of our Continuum magazine. So it'll be more in-depth, and there is quite a bit more material to cover. And I will give you a chance to hear whatever else develops down there. She's down there at least through the middle of July, and we're checking out some other angles and other stories that are down there. So I want to thank her again. That was Kay Winter. And now, coming up after this break, we're going to be talking with Glenn Campbell, a special researcher in the Area 51 of Nevada area. He's actually in Rachel, Nevada. He's the director of the Area 51 Research Center. He has got an interesting story to tell. He's fleshing out the parts of it now, investigating the background of the person that is telling it. But he's a very skeptical guy like I am, and he tends to believe that there might be something to this. So stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
It's been said, the pen is mightier than the sword. With Paranet, the computer and modem is mightier than the pen. Paranet is the world's foremost electronic authority on UFOs and the paranormal. Paranet gives you rapid access to UFO researchers, investigators, and others like you who want to know what's going on. You'll find stimulating discussions, valuable resources, and best of all, an interactive link to the world through the Internet's information superhighway. There's a variety of departments dealing with paranormal activities, parapsychology, alien abduction research, conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and cutting-edge science. There's even a skeptics conference. Paranet also has the world's most comprehensive database of news articles, citing reports, and much more, available for a small fee. So plug into power and knowledge with Paranet. Call the data line at Area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet at 303-429-2654.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These are free, pocket-sized guides giving you information about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio frequencies, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, and local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call Area 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at Area 303-669-1800.
Thank you.
listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back to the program. The second half of the program we're going to devote to another story of interesting proportions. And if it checks out, it could be very, very, very interesting. Now, before we go, I want to set this up a little bit and tell you what the for those of you who do not know what Area 51 is. In 1989, Area 51 has been at it's a base that's contained within the Nevada test site. And as a lot of you know, Nevada is a large part of Nevada is a proportion to government test sites. Area 51 is just one of those within this huge section of land. Anyway, in 1989, an alleged former base worker, Robert Lazar, came forth and said that the government had captured flying saucers and was test flying them over the Green Mountains and some area down there around Area 51. Of course, a lot of people have checked out Bob Lazar's background. It's never really checked out, and it still remains an interesting story, but that's all it is, an interesting story. My next guest is Glenn Campbell. He is the director of the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. And Glenn is a very level-headed skeptic, like I am. I'm very skeptical, as you know. And Glenn has been in contact with a person who is known as J-Rod. And J-Rod is a retired mechanical engineer. Now, the story that Glenn is hearing is quite interesting, and I'm going to have Glenn tell you what it is. But essentially, it is an expanded version of the Bob Lazar story talking about this. But again, it's more interesting, and it seems to, in some ways, this person has checked out satisfactorily to Glenn, and he is continuing to pursue the story. With that in mind, welcome Glenn Campbell. Good evening, Glenn.
Hi, Michael.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, tell us about J-Rod. How did you meet him, and what has he told you?
Well, this is an old guy. He's about 70 now. I ran into him at one of these little local UFO conventions. And he's, you know, just your average grandfatherly type. You wouldn't think much of him. He's involved in a few little crafts that are quite interesting. But you get talking to them, and he claims to have worked for some 30 years on a program that seems connected with the program that Bob Lazar mentions. He's designing simulators for human reproductions of alien craft. In other words, somewhere along the line, we've got some alien craft, and some secret government agency is trying to reproduce them. And as they're reproducing them, they're also designing a flight simulator to train the pilots. Now, my source never worked with the real craft, but he did work with a flight simulator, and that directly implies some things about the real craft. So this is the sort of story you would expect if there really was a program of this nature, a big, highly compartmentalized government project where people really don't know what's going on in every other compartment, but someone in one particular specialty would know the general picture, and that's what this person conveys.
Okay. Now, why did he pick the pseudonym J-Rod? Is that something significant, or...?
Well, it turns out he knows he's run into an alien. And he's in the course of his work, basically in a design laboratory, but in the course of his work, he has seen a live alien, one of your typical grays, dressed in street clothes. And this alien, whose name is J-Rod, he understands, acts as a technical advisor for our government, helping to translate the alien technology into our technology. And J-Rod thought it would be cute to use that name, too, so we now refer to him as J-Rod, too.
Okay. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. My guest is Glenn Campbell, director of the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. We're talking about J-Rod, who is a mechanical engineer that's retired, who has approached Glenn and has been telling Glenn about an unusual, highly compartmentalized government program. Glenn, now, where does the history of this goes back to, what, 1953 or beyond?
It goes back to about the mid-50s. Okay, first of all, I need to talk about what I know about J-Rod, and what I know is basically what he presents himself as a retired gentleman. He definitely has a background working for government defense programs. That I've confirmed from other sources that he indeed did work, for example, with the NERVA program, developing a nuclear rocket and various other defense programs. So it's possible. Beyond that, I have only the word of this gentleman. I'm not saying at this point whether it's true or not, but it's fascinating folklore, and it's folklore that dovetails with the other folklore we know about, namely the crash disk stories of the 40s and 50s, and with Mr. Lazar. Now, according to J-Rod, there were crashes. He doesn't mention Roswell, but there was a crash in Arizona, northwestern Arizona, near Kingman. And this was about, I believe it was 1953 or earlier, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, we recovered the craft, we recovered bodies, and we recovered some live ones. And these live ones became the emissaries that eventually put the secret portion of our government in contact with the aliens.
Now, when you say secret portion of our government, what does that mean?
Well, we're not talking about the CIA or the Air Force or any of our known agencies. We're talking about a government that a portion of the government that was essentially calved off from the main government back in the early and mid-1950s. And this was essentially done as the Manhattan Project was done. It was put in its own compartment. Thereby, you can't get any of this information by filing a FOIA with the NSA or the CIA. You have to go to the compartment that this is really in, and you just can't find it. What he calls a satellite government, and this was set up by all of of all the people. It was set up by Richard Nixon, he says.
Interesting. That's quite interesting. Of course, a secret satellite government makes a lot of sense. And essentially, if they are working on this type of technology, it makes sense when they say the Air Force says, we don't know anything. You know, we don't have any evidence of this. Glenn, why is this guy coming forward?
That is one of the more interesting aspects of his story. He says that he has been given permission to talk, and that his bosses know, for example, that he's talking to me and that he's talking to others. And this is perhaps the most intriguing part of the story. They're not suppressing him. They're letting him talk. They're giving him certain limits, things he cannot talk about. But he's talked about aliens. He's talked about discs. And this is very interesting if it's true. It means that the government is trying to open up, trying to leak this information out in small ways over time.
So, in other words, what he's telling you then would be one of their ways of leaking this to the public, correct?
Right. And it's not terribly sinister, as many UFO buffs would seem. It's just he has had an interest in talking. He asked his boss, can I talk? And his boss says, yes, here's what you can talk about and here's what you can't talk about. It's not really a deliberate program as much as it's just a loosening up a bit.
Okay. Glenn Campbell, director of the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. We're talking about J-Rod, who is a retired mechanical engineer who claims that the government has been working on saucers and that type of thing. We'll take your calls. We've got some calls on hold, and we've got more comments and more questions for our guest, Glenn Campbell, when we return. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. We want to hear from you. That's a toll-free number. Give us a call. My name is Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum. one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
An increase in immigration to the United States.
A report issued today states that newly arrived immigrants...
It seems like every day there's another news story about refugees or immigrants. But beyond the headlines, there are things about immigration that you as an employer need to know. People who are already in the United States, who already have a legal right to work in this country, are being discriminated against by employers who don't know the law. Did you know that in almost all cases it is illegal to require U.S. citizenship? And it is also illegal to demand to see specific documents, like a green card, or not accept other papers that can prove a right to work. Take time to learn the law. It's easy, and it can save your business from facing severe penalties. Call the Office of Special Counsel at 1-800-255-8155. 1-800-255-8155. And next time you do any hiring, look at the facts, not at the faces.
Truth is sometimes stranger than fiction. Finding out the truth is the hard part. Join us in our search with the Paranet UFO Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back, my guest, Glenn Campbell, director of the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. We're talking about another story of somebody who claims that the government is working with alien technology. Let's go to the phones. We've got a call from Dan in Ogden, Utah, our affiliate, KCNR. Good evening, Dan.
Well, thank you. Hello.
Good evening. Welcome to the program. What's your question for our guest?
Well, actually, it's a comment. I'm blind, and I was abducted several years ago, and I've had telepathic contact and things of that nature for quite some time. I was not aware at the time when I first had telepathic contact with Lomar, or Alomar, as he is often called, that the CIA had contact with him via a woman from Maine when she would go into trances back in 1959.
Right.
So I didn't know that at the time in 1976 when my contacts left from suspicions of being tagged and had contact to actual preparation. My thing was rather unique because I knew that I was going up because I and a sighted friend instructed to go to a particular area of a county where we had never been, and the basic signposts of what the roads were like, what the fences were like, the terrain and so forth were all described to us before we ever got there. And we went, we experienced one time it was an aborted attempt to go up because there was another type of craft that was going to interfere.
Was this, did you go to Nevada or something? Is that what you're telling us?
No, we were in Kansas.
I see.
Yeah, and so I've had contact.
Okay.
In different places. And in regards to Whitney Strieber, I believe his name is, of Communion, I was instructed on how to do various things that he was too. And at that time, I wasn't familiar with him either.
Do you think it's beyond the pale that the government might have some relationship with an alien civilization?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that there are ties I met a woman that was the daughter of a director of a secret base down in Florida. And I met her back in around 1975 or so.
Okay.
And this base, she explained it to me, this base was down in Florida, and that there was an agenda that the government and the extraterrestrials had.
Okay. We're going to have to move on, Dan. Thank
sure.
you very much for your call. Okay, Glenn, what, do you have a comment on that?
No, that's way beyond my depth, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's interesting. He was talking about a story that was reported in a book several years ago, UFOs Past, Present, and Future by Bob Emenager. The woman he was talking about was Mrs. Swan, who allegedly had two or three CIA agents meet her in a hotel room, and she demonstrated automatic writing through her contact with a guy named Krill. We've heard that name before. That comes out of the John Lear camp.
That's right.
Yeah. But anyway, this J-Rod that you're working with, do you know, I mean, has he been using his real name with you? Do you know?
Sure, I know who he is, and I'm sure quite a few people out there know who he is as well. He's not terribly secret.
Uh-huh.
I simply want to protect him from the crush of the UFO
well, sure.
crowd. It's not the government we're trying to protect him from. It's from the UFO believers who really can be terribly insistent and demanding on one's time. I think Bob Lazar is a good example of this. As soon as he came forward, he was deluged with people camping out on his front lawn, essentially.
You're right.
And demanding to query him, and simply no human should have to go through that.
Now, I know you know we're talking about, again, folklore or a story, but essentially, what is your take on this guy? Do you believe him?
I'd say that if he's talking to me about anything else in the world, anything that I could verify, I'd say I believe him 100%. But, of course, what he's talking about is so far out that I have to move cautiously. And I move, as we say, I'm approaching it as folklore, as collecting a set of stories which, true or false, are fascinating in themselves. And I look for connections within the story, connections to other stories. And when you have a story that's totally internally consistent and consistent with what you know in the world, well, then it will probably turn out to be the truth. But at this point, I'm reserving judgment.
Of course, and that's good investigation, I think. You know, at least that's the way it should be done. now, Glenn, what has he said about the... now, as I understand it, there is a 30-foot diameter replica or something like that that... resembles kind of closely what Bob Lazar has described as the...
Yeah, to a high degree. So the equipment that he worked with is a simulator, a flight simulator. It is essentially a reproduction of the entire craft, but it's gimbaled to the ground. It's attached to the ground. And it can pivot up to 60 degrees in either direction. It's funny because J-Rod has taken the Bob Lazar plastic model kit from the Tester Corporation, and he's made just a few modifications to it. He's put a little ball joint at the bottom as a gimbal, and he's extended some of the dimensions. But essentially, he's working with Lazar's craft, and he's all the features you see in the Lazar model turn up in J-Rod's description of the simulator. The simulator is a look and feel reproduction of the actual craft, which J-Rod has only very limited experience with.
Now, as a good investigator yourself, why do you think, I mean, what's your first blush on this? Why do you think that his story so closely matches Lazar's? I mean, if we believe that Bob Lazar is not necessarily who he says he is, you know, do you have any feel for how come all of a sudden this J-Rod, the story he tells, is very similar to Bob Lazar's?
Well, one logical explanation is that J-Rod has heard Bob Lazar and has cooked up a story of his own based on it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I dismiss that.
Okay.
But my first instinct as an investigator is to look at the human aspect of not what he's saying to me, but how he's saying it. Mm. Sort of my own private lie detector. I look at certain other people. Plenty of people have made claims like this in the past, but they tend to make expansive claims that include, you know, the JFK assassination and just about everything else in it. I appreciate a claim that is very limited in scope, saying, not trying to explain the whole UFO phenomenon, but just saying this is this little piece of the puzzle that I have, and limiting oneself to that puzzle. in that respect, I respect Lazar's story because, again, it is limited. It doesn't say he knows everything. He just says, I went into this facility, I worked on these craft, and this is all I know. And I realize the Lazar story has a lot of problems, but I don't dismiss it yet. I think that there still could be a gem there, and I think there's still room for possibility of it being the truth.
Okay. Hey, one question before we go to break. Has the closing of the Freedom Ridge out there, Freedom Ridge Viewpoint, has it affected any activity at Area 51 that you've noted?
I haven't noticed anything, but I never noted anything secret to begin with. I've been here for 2 years and have never seen any flying saucers or any black budget aircraft.
Okay.
Certainly, they're more secure now. They can fly aircraft in and out more easily, but these aren't necessarily flying saucers at this point. This could just be a new stealth aircraft in development.
Okay. Very good. Hang on, Glenn. We'll go. We'll be right back. We'll get some information as to how people can contact you for further information. My guest is Glenn Campbell, director of the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. And when we come back, we'll get some information on how you can contact him to find out more. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet Newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
Paranet and MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, gives you a chance to hear and read more about UFOs and the paranormal. Catch up on our previous Paranet radio shows with cassette tapes you can order for $8 each or 2 tapes for $6 each, 3 or more at $5 each. Become a member of Paranet and subscribe to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly magazine. And don't forget our stunning black T-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, the Paranet and MICAP logos, and a beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to support this program. Call now for more information or to order your tapes, Continuum subscriptions, or T-shirts at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe at 1-800-UFO-NET-1.
Are UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And my guest is Glenn Campbell, director of Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada. Glenn, where are we going to go from here with this? You're going to continue to investigate this case and see where it goes?
Well, I follow the Zen method of UFO research, and basically I just let things happen. I think if one has patience and observes the virtues, I think that the story tends to come to you. I think you can't force certainly something like this. If it is coming out, there seems to be a motivation from within the government to do it. I think we just need to take advantage of it and let it happen. I need to emphasize that I think the real problem in UFO research is not the government, it's not the aliens, I think it's us, the observers. I think that society has to come to a certain state of maturity where it's willing to take this information and accept it and absorb it. And that's something that takes some time. It's not an overnight thing.
Interesting. That's very well said, too. How do people get a hold of you if they want further information? Or, as I understand, you publish a tour guide. You also publish a newsletter. Give out your particulars, and we'll get people in touch with you.
Sure. I put out a free newsletter on the Internet. Anyone can subscribe. Just drop me a message with the word subscribe in it to my America Online address, and that would be the Area 51RC. That's AREA51RC at AOL.com, and we'll put you on the list. We'll also send out at that time a little information document that tells you where to find our worldwide web page. Now, if you don't have Internet, I can drop a catalog in the mail to you with our documents. Just drop me a postcard or something to the Area 51 Research Center in Rachel, Nevada, 89001. You don't need a street address because they know where I am.
Who's they?
the government, agents of the government.
Yeah.
The U.S. Postal Service.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program to give us this information. And I'm sure we'll be having you back as more of this unfolds. Please stay in touch, okay, Glenn?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much. That was Glenn Campbell, director of the Area 51 Research Center, and a very interesting story about J-Rod. And, again, we're going to keep things going here and posted, keep you posted on what we find out. I want to thank our producers, Greg Barman, Brian Wood, and Daryl Bear for making this program possible and what it is. And the folks down at Poor Joe's Coffee House at 970 Lincoln Street, where we have our second office. And July the 13th, for people in the Denver area, July the 13th is the next MICAP meeting. It will be held at Poor Joe's at 970 Lincoln, a really good place to do things. And we invite you to come. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can contact me at 1-800-387-2001. That's 1-800-387-2001. Until next week, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes in the skies. Good night.